Good evening, everybody, or good morning, depending on you watching this. When you're watching this, welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our Under the Radar podcast. Is that right? It's tonight, Wednesday night?
It is. It's Wednesday.
Okay. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs and Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org back with us again.
Yeah.
And David, can you start by telling everybody what the heck the show is about for those first-time viewers?
It's essentially there are 32 conferences. There are 10 conferences that regularly get multi-bid leagues, although this year at least two of them really stink and may only get one. That is the Power Five, the SEC, ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12, and five other regular multi-bid leagues, which is the Atlantic 10, American, Big East, Mountain West, and West Coast. All the other 22 conferences, they're typically one-bid leagues. Not always. There's no rule that says they only get one. It's just that more often than not, that's all they get. And it's those 22. The other disqualifier is any team that's in the national polls. So in this case, it would be Buffalo. You can't be under the radar if you're on the radar, which is what the rankings are.
All right, and what we like to do with this show is start out with the feature conference of the week and then run through the rest of the conferences.
We never know the feature conference. Like, Chad does not get any sort of approval. Hey, what do you think? He just throws it up there.
I like to surprise you guys, you know, keep you on your toes. That's the way we work here, and, you know, not like we ever plan anything out.
No, we don't. Well, we've tried, and it failed.
I'm going to throw up our feature conference, and it's a conference that we have not discussed much this year, and the team at the top of it, I think, is a little bit interesting. It might be a little bit dangerous still come March. And that's the Horizon League, which I'm going to throw up here right now on the screen. David, very quiet. Well, Rocco, let me start with you here. Actually, very quietly, this Northern Kentucky team is 16-4.
Yeah, Northern Kentucky is a dangerous team. I mean, they if you go back to last year, they were the team that was favored to win the Horizon League tournament and fell short. By losing in the opening round to Cleveland State and then having to automatically go into the NIT and losing to a Louisville team that didn't have a lot to play for, but it was the NIT. So, but what they brought back was Drew McDonald, LaVon Holland, some veteran guys, Carson Williams. So NKU is a team that we've known since the beginning of this year and throughout the offseason was going to be a dangerous team, one of the favorites in the Horizon, along with Wright State, but Northern Kentucky has played very well of late and reestablished themselves as the team to beat in this league. And I think they present the biggest challenge to a higher-seeded team once tournament team comes out of anybody in the Horizon League. There are some nice stories happening in the league, but this is the team that presents the biggest threat.
Yeah. And other than a pair of 2-point losses, incidentally by the same exact scores to Eastern Kentucky and Oakland on the road, this will be a very impressive profile right now. And David, I would point out that they did beat Northern Illinois twice, something that Buffalo could not do.
They got the win at Northern Illinois. The win at Northern Illinois actually opened the season, and I think it was an overtime game. And I remember thinking, being surprised that it was that much of a struggle, even though it was a road game. Northern Kentucky, 16-4. I do want to. I think that they're good when compared to the rest of the league, but part of that is a product of the schedule that they've played. Nothing against them, but well, let's look at the league as a whole. We'll get to Northern Kentucky here in a second. I'm glad you picked this league. I'm a fan of this league. It's basketball centric, meaning there is no football in the conference. I believe there's 9 or 10 leagues, I forget them all, but this is one of the 10 that doesn't play football at any level. It's in metropolitan areas. It's typically, these are urban campuses with centrally located alumni bases. Some of the teams have pretty good followings. Wright State's attendance has climbed the last couple of years. NKU has certainly done well. We've seen Detroit draw well. We've seen Oakland draw well. But this is a down year for this league. When you look past Northern Kentucky, no one is within 2 games of .500. Oh, I'm sorry, IUPUI. No one other than them is even within 2 games of being .500 against D1 competition. And you kind of wonder what the hell happened to this league. And another reason we used to love this league, Chad, you and I, in the early days of Under the Radar, the format of the conference tournament was at campus sites, and it seemed like every year it came down to the final week of who was going to get finished first and get to host. And you had a really good storyline in these stakes games coming down the stretch. Since they moved to a predetermined site that's gone away, the atmosphere has not been the same at the conference tournament, and a lot of the times they failed to get the best team in. If Northern Kentucky does not win the conference tournament, is this a league that's sending a team to the play-in game?
Well, I would note that it has changed a little bit this year. I don't know if it was there last year as well, but the first of all, the conference is only going to be 8 teams. 2 teams will get eliminated in the regular season this year, and the quarterfinals are going to be on campus sites this year before they go to Detroit for the last 2 rounds. Mm-hmm. But you could have Detroit actually finish with the number 2 seed and end up in their hometown playing Northern Kentucky in the championship game. Although the way this conference tournament has played the last few years, we've been more like the 10 seed playing the 9 seed in the championship
game.
Right. I think we've seen a 10 seed and a 9 seed in the last 2 years make it to the finals.
Right. Valpo, who is not in the league anymore, was really good. Clearly the best team 2 years running, but failed to win the conference tournament both years and was just outside the bubble. I think 1 or 2 years, Chad, weren't they within the next group of 4, the first 4 out or the last, whatever you want to say, they were next in line when the committee revealed their seeding list. So they really need to go back to campus sites with this conference, because like I said, I mean, we have really enjoyed this league in the past. I'm glad you featured it, but we haven't talked about it much this year because it's just not compelling.
Well, let's look a little bit down beyond Northern Kentucky. Rocco, let me ask this question here. We've talked a little bit about Detroit with Antoine Davis there, but is it right to say who would be the most dangerous team should NKU not win the conference tournament? Who would be the one team? Is there anybody else in this league that anybody should fear among the major conferences if they win the bid?
I think it would be that the Detroit team from what we've seen thus far. I think Wright State coming into the year with Loudon Love back and a few other veterans back would be the shoe-in. But unfortunately for Wright State, they just haven't performed very well. They still have the same roster together, but they're just not performing. So perhaps Wright State later in the year will peak, but unfortunately it just hasn't happened for them. And Detroit, the reason I say them as my first response is because Antoine Davis is a guy that's a showstopper. He can take over a game at any moment. Doesn't matter if they're playing NKU, Oakland, Wright State, or whoever. He is a guy that has the ability to take over a basketball game, especially here in the Horizon League. I look to Detroit to be the real X factor. I know the tournament is in Detroit, and in a lot of cases, that might mean something. I don't think it's going to mean a lot here because that tournament has proved to us that there's not going to be a lot of people in the seats. And I don't think Detroit Mercy is the kind of school that's going to fill the seats.
Yeah, and the current conference
is going to have to come from within.
Yeah, the conference is looking for a new host site after this year. And so,
how about campus sites? Remember when they used to sell out the championship?
Yeah, David, we went over that one already. But, I do have the upcoming schedule here for this coming week. They actually have an afternoon game tomorrow. Oakland is at IUPUI. I think it's at 11 a.m. Eastern start.
Field trip game.
IUPUI, who you mentioned, does have the only other team with a winning overall record hosting the second and the third place teams there, Oakland and Detroit this week. So if you want to circle something, maybe those two. Green Bay has that one win over Belmont, but hasn't done much else this year. They're both at NKU tomorrow night also.
Yeah, the NKU Wright State swing. So,
but let's go through the rest of the conferences here, and let's start things off or swing on back to the America East, where we saw one upset tonight and one near upset today. It was a real exciting night for these top two teams in the America East. First of all, Rocco, without Anthony Lamb tonight, Vermont at home lost the rematch of last year's championship game.
Right, and I saw that Anthony Lamb was going to miss the game right before tip-off, and I threw a little tweet out about that. But, I think I'm still pretty surprised by this, Chad, because I think Vermont was head and shoulders above the rest of the league. And beyond that, I think UMBC was not the second-best team. In many weeks, they haven't even been the third or fourth-best team. They've been messing around with UMass Lowell, Hartford, teams that are not in the upper half of the league. And so for UMBC to rise to the occasion and not only win this game, but win it by 13 points is a little bit of an eye opener. I mean, I know Anthony Lamb's a great player. And I suspect Vermont will get him back at full strength. And if they do, they'll certainly be the favorite to run away with this automatic bid. But this is an eye-opener because it shows that there isn't a huge difference between Vermont minus a guy like Lamb and, you know, the middle of the pack, not even them versus the number two team.
Right. And David, the other story here, watching, I'll note this, at UMBC, the game before that had just barely survived by 1 point against Albany at home. And what a tough luck week for Albany, who then tonight, the team that's now in sole position first place, had the game won most of the way, loses in overtime by a point to Stony Brook on a late three-pointer at the end of overtime. Right. After Stony Brook barely won at Maine on Saturday. I mean, Stony Brook playing with fire here with the bottom two teams of the conference.
Yeah, the bottom two teams in the conference, and really, I mean, these are among the 30 or 40 worst teams in Division I, Albany and Maine this year. So not only is it the bottom two, it's the bottom 40 of the nation. And this is a Stony Brook team that has looked really good. Now, they did win both of the games. But, you know, 16-3 overall against D1, more true road wins than any other school. I don't think they're going to get inside the bubble, even if they win out, but they at least could get in the discussion. That's how good they are. But here they are playing with their food. I love that expression, with Maine and Albany. And I know, Albany, you can throw the record books out the window. No, you can't. Albany's terrible.
Yeah, you look at that Stony Brook profile, a ton of quadrant four wins. I mean, probably more quadrant four wins than anybody in the nation also. Yeah. But what you can say is they have 10 true road wins, 11 wins away from home, and that blows away anyone in the country, even top-tier power conference teams. But, it really hasn't been against, other than the win at South Carolina, nobody have note that they've actually beaten.
Right. The win at Rhodey felt good for a minute, but they're not.
VCU couldn't win.
I'll say they haven't impressed with the wins, but on the loss side, the three losses I can respect, because I know Holy Cross in the non-conference was above expectations. Brown has proven to be an above average mid-major team, and Hofstra we know is on a 13-game winning streak. Yep. So Stony Brook's got, we have a lot to learn still about Stony Brook, I think. And Chad, I know you're about to get to this, but we have a huge game coming.
Huge game. And whether or not Anthony Lamb can play or not is going to be a big deciding factor in this game.
Yeah.
There we go, Saturday, Vermont at Stony Brook.
Exactly. And Lamb looks like, he's in concussion protocol, gives him three more days to come back. I mean, obviously, you got to treat concussions with all the tender TLC that you can, but so even if Lamb sits out and Stony Brook wins this one, there's a lot to be decided in this conference going forward. And if Lamb plays, Stony Brook still wins. This is gonna be a fun ride the rest of the way. I think Stony Brook's legit enough to at least cause a little bit of concern for Vermont people.
Yeah, and a lot at stake here, home court advantage, the way this feeds into the conference tournament. Yeah. I think concussion protocol, the best thing you can do is chug bourbon. It'll make your headache go right
away. Well, David chugs the bourbon. Let's take a quick look at the Atlantic Sun Conference, which features still two teams that remain undefeated at the top there, and with top 50 net ratings, and Liberty and Lipscomb both got through this week without falling. Lipscomb very impressive over Kennesaw. Liberty very impressive over North Alabama team that had been red hot, believe it or not. But Rocco, let me start with you. What are your thoughts on these two top teams here?
I think they're both really good teams. I just think Lipscomb's got more proof in the pudding than Liberty. Mm-hmm. Because of what they were able to do in the state of Texas. And I think also because of the fact Lipscomb won the league last year, and we know that Garrison Matthews is a big-time, big-stage kind of player. So if Lipscomb does end up representing the Atlantic Sun in the NCAA tournament, I don't think any of us will have a doubt that they're going to show well because they have Matthews and some supporting cast. I think Liberty – is a really nice team, and they've done some amazing things so far in their first year in the ASUN, winning at UCLA and winning some other good games. But there's still a little bit of a mystery to them, and I think that mystery is going to continue to linger until we finally get to see these teams play, which won't be until February.
Right. They play twice in the latter – in the second half of the conference schedule.
It's coming up next week on Tuesday, actually. That's the 29th of January, if I'm correct on my calendar here. Lipscomb at Liberty, the first match.
Which is big, because the round one's at Liberty, which, of course, gives Liberty the chance to show what they've got. And, you know, anything could happen in that game. I would rather, between the two, I definitely trust Lipscomb more because they've proven themselves a little bit more. But that's nothing against what Liberty's done.
Right, and I agree. I just think Lipscomb has a little bit more. NJIT looked really good coming in the conference play, but they've kind of slipped a little bit. Liberty and Lipscomb now two games in front of everybody else. I wouldn't be surprised if Lipscomb went to Liberty and got the win. And if Lipscomb can run the table in this league, which that is their toughest remaining game of the season, and that probably also includes the conference tournament because they'll be playing at home if they're able to win on Tuesday. You got to start to think, where do they land if this team wins out? Because it's not outside the realm of possibility that they will. Right. They've been not just winning, but blowing teams out.
I'll tell you one thing to factor in here is that Liberty is new to this conference this year. So whereas you have familiarity with everyone else in the league, nobody has that familiarity with Liberty. And that may be playing to Liberty's advantage a little bit at this point.
It could be.
I did like them coming to the season, but I didn't expect them to be this good, quite honestly.
Yeah, I didn't either.
And one other thing, Chad, is if for any reason Liberty or Lipscomb does not get the bid, any of the other teams can expect to go to Dayton.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Except for North Alabama, because they're not eligible. But
they can still go to Dayton.
they have to buy tickets. Big Sky Conference, David. Let me let you start things off here where – Montana is now a game behind. Montana and Northern Colorado are both a game behind the Las Colinas Weber State team that we talked a little bit about them last week. Also, they picked up a huge win over Northern Colorado over the weekend. But
yeah,
they played well now.
Yeah, I'm starting to like them more and more. I had kind of given up on them, but when you take another look at them, they do have the nice win against BYU out of conference. Well, nice, relatively speaking, and. I don't like Montana. Not that 5-2 is awful, and not that 12-6 on the year is awful, but I think we were expecting more out of them than what we've seen. So you can't help but be a little disappointed. Weber's just shown a little more.
Yeah, and Rocco, this week coming up, let me get that. Weber is at Montana on Saturday, so it's a huge game this weekend.
And those were fun games last year, so be sure and tune into those.
it is a big game, and I fully expect the home court to defend the home court. But you know, in the Big Sky this year, I think the margin between the top half to the middle half to the bottom half is slimmer than any of us expected, because you know, even when Weber State's playing teams like Portland State at home or at Southern Utah, they're going to overtime, and Montana certainly is struggling with way more teams than we ever anticipated. And that's just a microcosm of what the league is right now. It's a league that's full, as we know, full of hard road trips. Yeah. But also, even when these teams are coming to other teams building, they're coming with a different type of chip on their shoulder and maybe not facing the type of adversity as you would in a larger league. So they've got a different mentality, I guess, than playing against a really tough home crowd. And we're seeing a lot of mixed results because of that.
Yeah, and a lot of parity in this league. A quick shout out before we move on. I know we can't wait to get to the next one. Southern Utah, much improved over the last couple years.
Yeah, this team was about 3 or 4 years ago was the worst teams in D1. Standing there with 9-7 overall this year, and on pace to maybe even get one of the top 4 or 5 seeds in the conference tournament, get that first round bye. Mm-hmm. And this should be a fun conference tournament. I know it's going to be in Boise, and there'll be about 10 people there. But it should be a fun
during the conference tournament, they had the floor sweepers at halftime. There was no halftime show, and the stream didn't turn off. You just got to watch them sweep the floor. It was fascinating.
That drive from Pocatello to Boise, definitely the shortest. So if the Bengals can make it there, they'll have the best chance.
Yeah. Big South Conference. How about this Radford team? A nice win. Blowout win over Gardner Webb, who I thought was playing really well in this conference here. Rocco, let me start off with you on this Radford team. Also picked up wins over Asheville and Longwood this week.
Yeah, I like Radford. I think they have more than enough staying power to be the favorite in the Big South, let alone nationally to be a relevant team to potentially be an upset pick in the NCAA tournament. I think, even on my own seed list, I've got Radford ahead of teams like Hofstra and Marshall and Loyola Chicago. Still, of course, that's due to their wins at Texas and at Notre Dame. But I think them being able to go to places like Austin and South Bend and be able to come out victorious. I mean, the amount of confidence that the team, especially a veteran-laden team like Radford is, has been able to acquire in the non-conference on top of what they brought into this year, it puts them on a different playing field than the rest of the Big South. And so just from a competitive standpoint, I'd love to see Radford come out of the league.
David, anything from these other – they've got three teams with one loss there, including Campbell with Chris Clemens leading the way. But those three teams, Winthrop, Campbell, High Point, have you seen anything from them that makes you a believer, or is it really just Radford's league?
Well, you mentioned Campbell, but the one thing that's crazy about this league in following it in recent years, even by the time we get to the second half of conference play, there's only a game or two separating eight teams. Here, Radford is dominating the league, yet despite their domination, there's three teams that are still within one game of them. Now, does that happen anywhere else other than the Big South? And I'll say this, like High Point and Winthrop, while I don't think that they're on Radford's level, I've been much more impressed with them. They've done better in league play than I thought they would. Longwood, a team I was actually kind of excited about being how well they did out of conference, really struggling more than I thought they would. So there's that. But no, Radford, Rocco pretty much covered it. Yeah. The wins at Notre Dame and Texas. And when you pull up their profile, they have six losses. Five of them are to like solid tournament teams. So, I mean, there isn't really anything bad among those six losses.
Right, David. And in those five losses,
three. I'm sorry.
Three of them, David. I don't think you want to call Duquesne, Ohio, and James Madison tournament teams at the moment.
Well, no, I like Duquesne's chance of making the A-10 tournament.
Okay.
I think too, David, just to add on to your point, five of those six losses were in a consecutive streak where they had to play nothing but road games in two or two and a half week time frame. And I hope the committee pays attention to that, because when you're starting to compare teams like Radford against Marshall and Hofstra and others that are in their area of seeding, just for, prognostication purposes at this point, it actually makes them stand out, because you have a legitimate reason why they weren't able to pull those out, but they were competitive clearly, and they actually pulled a couple out. And that shows, you put them in an NCAA tournament setting where kind of you reset the whole equation for all teams that get invited to that. I mean, they could beat a three or four seed legitimately.
Right. And we were told this before the season started that they were going to look at that this year.
Well, upcoming schedule, Radford is hosting Charleston Southern and Campbell this week. But the big game is coming up next Wednesday. We'll probably be able to talk about it on our next week's Under the Radar show. But UNC Asheville, the only team in D1 without a win this season, has their most winnable game of the entire year, hosting South Carolina Upstate.
Tickets are still available. I have called Asheville. There are still tickets available.
So circle that one. That has huge implications for our centenary award, which we give out to the worst team in D1 every year.
Yes.
If Asheville can get by that one with a loss, they may not win a game this season.
Right.
But let's move on to the Big West Conference. And Rocco, have we been ignoring UC Santa Barbara a little too much? I mean, we gave them a little bit of love this year, but they're now, you know, in sole possession.
We talk about them every week, don't we?
Not as much as Irvine, though.
I mean, I'd say you guys have. I certainly haven't. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with you guys, but the Gauchos are here to stay. I mean, they've got a couple. Well, for myself, being a Seattle person originally, a couple local guys killing it: Ja'Cory McLaughlin and Armon Davis. Armon Davis out of Federal Way, who's now a national high school power that just played on Martin Luther King Day on ESPN, and Ja'Cory's a former UW commit that eventually transferred away from Oregon State to UCSB. This team is a talent-laden team. In fact, they're one of their best players from last year, Mitch Hedinger, is coming out the bench still. And we all know that they beat San Francisco, who's only lost a couple of times this year. So yeah. This UCSB team is laden with talent. It's no surprise for those of us from the West, because Joe Pasternak comes from Arizona. He was Sean Miller's number one assistant coach. Took over this program last year, of course, had the largest turnaround. I think it was from 5 wins to 25 or so wins. I don't quote me on that, but really about a plus 20 or so turnaround. And now he's got guys that have gotten to know each other, gel together, play well together. And we know what Irvine can do from what they did in the non-league, but Santa Barbara is definitely a force to be reckoned with, and another team in addition to Radford that could make noise in the tournament.
Yeah, right. Irvine, real tough game tonight. Probably their toughest remaining game, aside from going to Santa Barbara, the Eaters. But they've been road warriors before. Losing the black and blue game, I was kind of surprised based on how bad Beach had looked prior to that game and how good Irvine had. The other thing about Irvine, and the reason I like Santa Barbara a little more, Irvine needs to get their streaming under control. It's atrocious. It's not watchable.
Yeah, as much fear watching this, you'll have the result of that Irvine at Hawaii game that's coming up later tonight as we record this, though. But, David, you also have a huge, huge game on Saturday, the final installation of the year, unless they meet again in the conference tournament, of the Rivervine Cup.
The Rivervine. Oh, the Rivervine. I didn't realize we had the Rivervine.
Yes, Riverside at Irvine. Irvine can clinch the cup title with a win in that game. So
yes, the Rivervine trophy. Oh,
love this. We've got Irvine at Hawaii coming up here in a couple of hours.
And Hawaii's streaming is pristine. I'm going to stay up and watch that one, at least in as long as it's worth watching. And I'm going to be exhausted tomorrow and hating it.
The streaming in Hawaii is much better than the officiating, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
David, the Colonial Athletic Association should be flashing up on the screen right now, and this Hofstra team is just looking so good right now. A huge win over College of Charleston over the weekend by 14 points.
College of Charleston has crashed into a mountain.
Well, yeah, I forget about Charleston, but how about Hofstra? Let me put their profile up here. Rocco, here's that Hofstra profile. Should be flashing up on the screen any second now. Only the 3 losses, and these may be 3 losses to 3 tournament teams, or close to tournament teams, at least maybe in VCU's case.
Yeah, they're all on, you know, true away courts. So it's, you know, Hofstra is one of the few teams in the country that you'll find that actually didn't play a neutral court game. And, you know, what they've shown, especially here in the CAA, is that they can play, and they can play well, and they can find ways to win on the road and at home. I thought last week was a barometer, just having UNC Wilmington, who's not that great of a team, but also Charleston, come in on Saturday. They passed that test with flying colors despite struggling in the first half against Wilmington. I want to give credit where credit is due, and I think Hofstra deserves that right now, clearly. I just think when it's all said and done, you know, Northeastern and Charleston are not going to back down when it comes to into the CAA tourney. So I'm really anxious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, well,
interesting, Dave.
Just on vacation. I mean, they have fallen apart. And this was a really good team.
They are like, good. They're a really good team. And they were impressive. I got to see them in person at Northeastern last Thursday. And, you know, very physically imposing. I mean, they're built like a, I don't want to say an SEC team, but very, very close to that. Maybe conference, you'd say, Western Kentucky type of, like, muscle.
Right,
and they can mess with teams that are in power conferences with that type of imposing lineup.
Yeah.
But I think there's just something off with them at the moment.
Right, and they could get it fixed because if we pull up College of Charleston's profile, the top of it is actually a lot better than anything Hofstra has on theirs. You know, the win against VCU in particular.
Right,
maybe that's about it. But they have just – Earl Grant done a fantastic job overall there, but they have just sort of hit an unprecedented wall where they've lost, is it 4 out of 5? And you wonder what is going on because this was a team that was rolling up until about
– What I will say about both these teams, you look at the remaining schedules, they both have 11 games left. Hofstra has 7 of those 11 are on the road. Charleston, 7 of the 11 are at home. So the schedule definitely favors Charleston that way. But Charleston, 2 games back already, it's a – I don't know. Four games back already. I don't think they can overcome that. If anybody can catch them, it might be Northeastern. I don't think anyone's going to catch Hofstra. But you also got to remember, Charleston's going to host, or at least their home city, have the conference tournament. So that
and be a fact. Unfortunately, that's just. I mean,
if Charleston ends up as a 4 seed or a 5 seed, Hofstra has to play them in the semifinals.
Which is in a virtual road game. Now, it's not on their campus. It's at the Charleston Coliseum, which I believe is in North Charleston. It's still a very pro-Charleston crowd and atmosphere.
It should be.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised, though. I mean, Charleston's more of a tourist city, and if the team is not the front runner, the town has a hard time getting behind them. I've been talking to a few guys down there, but in general, you're right. They do have a big advantage no matter what. And I think they have so much talent. Like, I think it's just, you know, if we were talking right now, and just imagine we're not talking about the Colonial and we're talking about the Big Ten, right?
Yeah.
You would look at a team like Nebraska or Indiana or Wisconsin, right? And at some point in the year, those teams that are fifth, sixth, seventh, fourth, they're going to go through a rut. And we're not going to think twice about it. We're just going to know they're good. That's what's going on with Charleston. They're playing 5 months worth of basketball, and there's going to be a period of time where they're not playing good basketball, and that just happens to be now. I fully believe that they'll get it fixed, and by March they're going to be right up there with Hofstra and Northeastern.
Right. Upcoming schedules on the screen there. Hofstra's games this week are both on the road at James Madison at Towson. Also, it used to be a really good rivalry. It kind of died off in recent years, but Drexel and Delaware playing on Saturday.
Yeah, that one
used to be a lot more fun than it's been in recent years where they've both been.
This whole league used to be
Delaware, be careful, though, because they're getting better every game. I got my eye on them.
Yeah. Conference USA, though, Rocco. Marshall now Marshall tied for first place with North Texas coming off of the loss to Western Kentucky just the other night.
Yes. And Marshall, you know, I can't help but maybe it's recency bias a little bit. I can't help but think about last year when, you know, we were kind of excited about Marshall, but they got off to a really slow start. And then we wrote them off, I think, about this time of year and prior to that. But as we rolled through the end of January into February and into March, Marshall continued to grow and grow and grow. I feel like they're on that same type of trend now. You can't really fault them for losing on the road at Western Kentucky. By the way, Western Kentucky, I mean, it doesn't get a lot any more schizophrenic than them.
Yeah.
But you have to respect the fact that if they do show up, they're very capable of beating you with the
– Yeah, look what they did this week. They lost at home to Florida International, then they beat Florida Atlantic.
Exactly. But I expect Marshall to be right there, and certainly in the top four, which is the crucial number for the scheduling when it's all said and done.
Yeah, North Texas also at the top of the league there. I realize that a lot of people like them. That record really pops out of 17-2. You peruse Twitter. They're everybody's favorite dark horse. I'm not as sold on them. I'm actually more impressed with Marshall now, despite the earlier loss to Western Kentucky, because a lot of North Texas, while they do have some decent wins, they beat Louisiana Tech, who can be good depending on the day. It's come against fluff. I mean, essentially,
the worst strength of schedule of the conference.
Two wins over Rice.
Yeah. What they've established is that they're really good at beating teams that would not finish in the top half of the Southland.
Dave, you always like to pick on the Southland Conference. Come on.
It's bad.
Here's the upcoming schedule. North Texas actually hosting UAB and Middle Tennessee this week. And we find Marshall, they're at Louisiana Tech and at Southern Miss. So those are the key games of note, I guess, in this conference.
Yeah, that game at La Tech might be kind of exciting because La Tech good at home, at least.
But let's move over to the Ivy League, David. And the conference still in the infancy of conference play with us. Yeah. Seems there's only one game and still going to be one more week before we get there. But I think we got to talk about the Owen State Quakers.
You want to talk schizophrenic. Penn is on the verge of winning the Big Five. We had looked into this. We don't think the Big Five winner has ever missed the NCAA tournament ever. And maybe once the Big Five winner wasn't inside the bubble. But here's Penn, 0-2. Now, they played Princeton, the rival. One of the losses was in overtime. They were actually both really close games. But, you know, they had the wins over Villanova, the win at Temple. That's a fantastic win. I don't think Temple has another home loss. Or if they do, it's only one other win. But losing to Monmouth, who I think might have one or two other wins, I mean, that is just a horrendous loss. That is quite a scope. You beat a protected seed and you lose to Monmouth. There's quite a bit in between there.
That is Temple's only home loss in the season, by the way. Okay. They beat St. Joe's coming up on Saturday. They will not only have won the Big Five, they'll have gone undefeated in the Big Five. And I haven't fully done the research, but I don't think any undefeated team in the Big Five play has ever missed the NCAA tournament.
And they
may not even make the Ivy League tournament.
It's been a struggle because, I mean, you just never know what they're going to do. And Yale, let's talk about Yale because Brown had been really surprising and Yale went to Brown and won. I think that might be one of Yale's tougher road games or tougher games in conference play, and they already have the win. So, yeah, very while we have to talk about Penn winning the Big Five, how about the Yale Bulldogs?
Yeah, Rocco, I mean, three respectable losses. At Vermont, maybe it won't end up being a tier one, probably be a tier two at the end of the day. But, and they've won every other game they've played.
Absolutely. I got the chance to watch Yale a couple times this year, and I was very impressed when they took out Miami on a neutral floor. And I know Miami's not middle of the pack ACC this year, but they're still a power five team. And then I also watched the double overtime loss when they lost to Memphis. They had Memphis on the ropes most of the game, unfortunately couldn't pull it off. But what that showed is with the athleticism that Memphis brings and that game being in, you know, at the FedEx Forum, for Yale to go in there, I think they only had one day of rest going into that game and battle all night long and try to pull it out was like, okay, this team's for real, and they're well coached, and they take care of every possession for the most part. And I think in Ivy League basketball, those are the types of characteristics that usually, you know, carry through to the end of the year and will absolutely allow you to win a championship.
Yeah,
what I've seen, Yale's got that in them.
Yeah, not predetermined site. Well, there used to not be a tournament at all, but tournament at Yale this year, not at the Plaster.
Right, the tournament's at Yale this year. This week, only three conference games this week, the big one being Friday night's Yale hosting Brown. Next week, they start with the Friday-Saturday night schedule, which will go for the rest of the season. And the biggest game, obviously, we already mentioned, St. Joe's at Penn, non-conference game. Mm-hmm. We have to do it because we do all the conferences. So very briefly, the Metro Atlantic, David, Riders 5-0 when we move on.
Yeah, Ryder 5-0. There are 11 awful teams in this league. Ryder not as awful as the other 10.
I think that's about all we can say about this entire conference, Rocco.
Yeah. How about Tim Kluse? No, we won't even go there.
I would like. Yeah, go ahead, David. Sorry.
Well, no, I mean, I'm disappointed that this league is never really broaching a multi-bid status league, but I hate to see that it's as bad as it is because, God, it's a fun league.
I do got to give a shout-out here. Monmouth, who won their last non-conference game. Rocco, let me let you do it then. Go ahead.
No, you were right on top of it. So after starting 0-12, the Monmouth Hawks are 6-2 cents, and it all started with an overtime road win at the Penn team we just talked about. And Monmouth is not just doing it at the end of games or like sporadically. They're going out and physically dominating games. They beat Manhattan by 16. They've beat Fairfield by 17. They beat Iona, who was starting to get hot in their last game. They were able to pull out an overtime win against Siena as well. So I think Monmouth is really starting to turn the corner. And once we get to MAC tournament time, anything's possible.
Yeah, I will concur with that.
Yeah, this will be a fun tournament this year. It's Siena hosting against Siena is not very good, so I don't think we have to worry about that. Yeah. Upcoming schedule this week, Ryder is at Iona and hosting Monmouth and hosting Marist. But I don't even know what else we discuss in this conference. Right. Let's just move on.
Tim Clues.
David wants to talk about Tim Clues. I'll let you do an hour on Tim Clues after the show's over.
Okay, good. Yeah.
How about the good Mac, we saw, I know they're not technically under the radar, but let's talk about the other team that is under the radar is Northern Illinois, and a huge home win last night over Buffalo.
Real
exciting, real fun game.
Right, and I know Buffalo's not under the radar, but they are in the MAC conference. Buffalo fell behind early. We've seen them do that before. Buffalo came back. We've seen them do that before. They opened up a double-digit lead, I think. We've seen them do that. And then they collapsed. We hadn't really seen them do that. And did anybody on Earth think that Northern Illinois was going to come back and win after Buffalo had opened it up to 8 or 10 points or whatever it was? And it was kind of a surprising in this league. Every year we come in the conference play and there's two or three teams that we like and that we think could either land on the bubble or close to it if they run away. But then the league ends up eating itself. I mean, all the rivalry, this is a tough league. And here's Buffalo, not even in first place, and Bowling Green is. And they're on a roll this morning.
Rocco, is it time to discuss the Falcons?
It is, of course. I mean, 10 wins in a row, why would we not discuss the Falcons?
Yeah. Is it 10 or 12? It's 10?
It's 10.
I'll pull them up here. Pull them up here on the left side of the screen. Bowling Green, this may be one of the first times we've ever pulled up a Bowling Green profile. Team that hasn't been in the NCAA tournament in 51 years. Sitting there at undefeated 6-0 conference play.
They're playing very well, Chad. And I think only 3 of the 10 were on the road. So they are getting a little bit of home court hero action. But one of the three was at Kent State. And Kent State, if you didn't see last night, they were a pest. And they typically are. But when they went to Kent State, they beat them by 22. And that means, Bowling Green is playing with a little bit of dominance. And they're not just beating teams. They're beating them handily in a lot of cases. They have had a couple close calls. But the more wins they acquire, of course, the more confidence they bring, and that type of momentum will make an impact in the MAC tournament.
Right. Let's go back here and take a quick look at what's coming up this week in terms of these top teams: Buffalo, Bowling Green, even Northern Illinois, now I'm sure has some confidence. Also, there, Northern Illinois is at Akron and hosting Ohio this week. Well, Bowling Green is at Miami of Ohio and. Off after that, I think.
Buffalo at Kent. That one's going to be fun. Like you just got done talking about Kent State. They had a nice win last night against Toledo. So
they did.
Was it one or two overtimes? I think it was. I don't know. I was watching on my little screen.
It was one overtime.
I thought it was one overtime, but
I think it was a steal and a breakaway layup to win it.
Yeah, it was. So. A lot of bloated records in this league still. Kent State among them. I know that Buffalo was getting a lot of the accolades, and they certainly deserved it. But when you look at Kent, when you look at certainly Bowling Green and Toledo, who as good as Toledo was coming in, they're 3-3 in league play. And Ball State is another team that's capable of playing well that could really ruin someone's day. A lot of parity in this conference. And then you have
there's three top 100 teams. There's 11 top 178 teams, according to Ken Palmer, right? And, you know, Western Michigan's in the 200s, but barely in the 200s. So it's pretty impressive to see that type of depth with this many schools at the disadvantages that they have.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move over to whatever conference comes up next. And I think that, Rocco, it's going to be the MEAC. Do you want to give us 3 seconds of MEAC talk?
Sure. Why not? Norfolk State is playing good basketball for MEAC standards.
For my MEAC standards. Good basketball. Yes. Okay.
They've been able to survive the team of the people / South Carolina State road swing of last week in nice fashion. 5-point win, 6-point win. 6-0 now in the MEAC conference. So I think right now we're looking at Norfolk and North Carolina A&T as the co-leaders. I still think NC Central and Bethune-Cookman are potential teams that could steal that bid, but, you know, it's the MEAC, so anything can happen.
Yeah, yeah. The conference tournament is in Norfolk. You got to remember that, David, but, that hasn't really worked to their advantage in recent years, I don't think.
No, not at all. Quick observation here before we move on, and this will – the perfect reason to move on. You'll notice like the NET and the RPI, every now and then there's a discrepancy. Here we have only two teams in the top 300 of the net. Also only two teams in the top 300 of the RPI. What a horrendously bad league, even by MEAC standards this year. Let's move on.
I got the upcoming schedule there. North Carolina Central, they are hosting North Carolina A&T on Saturday. That if you're going to watch MEAC basketball, I guess you should watch that game. But I'd probably recommend that. There's probably a better game on at that time. I'm willing to bet.
Oh, we're getting it. Flow Hoops, we are getting it. We're going to be watching.
Missouri Valley Conference, David. What a disappointing league this has been. But now Loyola has moved into sole possession of first place.
Yeah, and I guess they're hitting their stride. They're playing now. I don't know what they're doing.
As we record this, they're actually getting blown out at Missouri State by 27 points. So strike everything I just said. They stink too.
No one is good. Loyola, you were trying to feel good about them, like maybe finally somebody's getting some distance here. Yeah, it's 64-32 with 4 minutes to go. 32 points in 36 minutes. Way to go, Loyola. Missouri State, not exactly a defensive juggernaut either. Adjusted deficiency, 232 there on the screen.
I think Rocco, actually, Drake, after losing Nick Norton, they lost a couple games. They bounced back well this past week, though.
Yeah, and they did again today. They beat Evansville at home, who is not a pushover these days. So I give them credit. I think, you know, they're getting tremendous leadership from one of the only holdovers on their team from the coaching turnover last year. That would be senior center Nick McGlynn. And the guy works his butt off, and he's been able to bring the transfers and the freshmen together. Drake, they did have a couple game blip after the Norton injury, but they've stuck together as a team very well, and I'm very impressed.
Yeah, if there's a story in this league, it's them, because there's
And Coach of the Year honors for Coach DeVries coming from Creighton after being a 20-year assistant. He's definitely got a leg up on the rest of the league for getting that award. If it's not for Valpo, but Valpo I think lost again today.
Interesting.
Coming up Saturday, Drake is at Valpo coming up on Saturday, so you may want to. That's two teams that are towards the top of the standings at least. Rocco, one of our favorite conferences coming up next in the Northeast, which included a Monday Martin Luther King Day special with the Battle of Brooklyn going to SFBK and a Wagner team that has completely decided to stop playing basketball.
what happened to Wagner? I honestly do not know.
They got blown out at home by Mount St. Mary's, who was winless in conference, and then they got crushed by Sacred Heart on Monday.
So at this time last week, the Seahawks of Wagner were far and away the best team in the metrics, and they had been the most competitive team in the league throughout non-conference. And within a week, they've totally thrown that in the garbage. I'm impressed by that in a bad way. But a team that has stepped up is the Colonials of Robert Morris. And, of course, Robert Morris last week did the two-headed sweep of Bryant in Central Connecticut. And they come in 5-1. They're the only one-loss team left in the NEC. And it just kind of seems like every year, no matter what we think of Robert Morris, they end up in this position.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. I think I mentioned them a couple weeks ago that I just had this feeling about them, and they have been proving us right so far. And you're right. It's every year. If you don't know who else to pick in this conference, just go with Robert Morris because they find a way.
St. Francis Brooklyn, for those of you that might be watching that haven't watched this before, they are one of the four teams that has never made the NCAA tournament that's been playing at this level since the inception of the tournament. One of the fun storylines about this conference is that the tournament is at campus sites, so the league season plays into that. Nice win for them, 4-2. So if you're looking for sort of a good story here, St. Francis Brooklyn getting to host the tournament and maybe winning it is something to root for.
Yeah, quickly, those other three teams are the Citadel, Army, and William & Mary. So SFBK, maybe with a shot to finally get in this year.
Yep.
Upcoming schedule, the SFBK team is at Fairleigh Dickinson and Mount St. Mary's, or Robert
Morris. They should win both of those.
Sacred Heart and Wagner. So, of course, Wagner's going to go in and win at Robert Morris because that's the way the Northeast works.
Yeah, essentially. Watch every game. Every game is awesome.
I was saying a couple weeks ago, don't bother watching Central Connecticut or Mount St. Mary's even. I think you should watch those teams too. They're showing some life even.
Right. Love this league.
Real fun league. Ohio Valley Conference time, and other than Grant Williams going 23 from 23 from the free throw line, we would be talking to Rocco about what Morant did for Murray State, going 21 for 21, being the first player in about 5 years to have done that. But Grant Williams actually bested him tonight for Tennessee.
I mean, that's outstanding, and which is great because you should make your free throws. But I mean, once you shoot 23 of them, I guess eventually you should miss one or two. But that's an impressive feat. The Ohio Valley, I'm impressed with this Jacksonville State Gamecocks team who, they're 6-0, of course, but two of those six wins are against Belmont.
Right. So
they won't have to play Belmont again. And now, they really can lock in on the two big matchups coming up with Murray State next Thursday, which, side note, I'm trying to make my way out there. Stay tuned. And then again at Murray State later in the year. So I'm sorry, they're not playing Murray State more than once. So they're just going to play them that one time next Thursday, even more reason to show up. This team is 6 out of the top 7 guys are seniors. The 7th guy is a junior. They play well together. Last week they rallied and won in overtime to beat Belmont for the second time. I'm very intrigued by this team. Of course, Murray State has all the headlines and a ton of talent. And I wish there was a way we could get them both in. I just don't. I don't see it.
No. And again, Jack stayed up on the screen. Go ahead and pull up Murray as well, Chad. Sure. You'll see why Murray State's schedule and profile is not doing them any favors. As soon as it loads, there's
nothing out of the top.
Yeah, I mean, all their wins are quad four, and I kind of hate this for them because it's one of those cases, and you see this a lot with under the radar teams, where the resume does not match how good the team probably is. They didn't give themselves many chances. They scheduled some ridiculous games. Spalding, I didn't even know they had a team. I'm not even making that up. I didn't know they had a team. Bethel, Tennessee, not even Division I. They did go to Auburn and Alabama, played both those teams tough, actually kind of blew a double-digit second-half lead against Alabama. Had they won one of those and they were in a position to win that Alabama game, I think that changes everything. I think maybe they would be inside the bubble if they went to Jack State and won and beat Belmont and avoided losses until the conference tournament championship. But it's just not there. As good as this Murray team is, and they are good, they're better than their profile, and they're probably better than whatever the seed the committee is going to get them. One of the games they better win better be that last one because they're not getting in without it.
And they also have – maybe that should be a disadvantage of the way that the schedule played out in the Ohio Valley this year is that the next two best teams, they only play once. That, on top of that, yeah. Their next three games are two of their next three games are those three games: Belmont this week, at Jack State next week, Houston next 10 days for this team.
So word to the wild, like
that's horrible. That's horrible. There's no excuse for that. We knew going into the season that these three or four teams would be the best. OVC should have been in front of that. I mean, I don't know all the politics or the bureaucracy, but that there's no reason for that to happen. I mean, a lot of these under the radar leagues are finally getting in front of that. The OVC needs to get on board.
Yeah, well, true, but I also think Murray State had to have a sense of how good they were going to be. Maybe they didn't realize they were going to be this good. And I know that they scheduled some teams that kind of let them down a little bit, Wright State in particular. But they needed to give themselves more chances than that.
Right.
But
with the circle this week also for Belmont, not only are they at Murray State in the huge game coming up tomorrow night, tough road test at Austin Peay, a very quiet but probably the fourth best team in this conference, Austin Peay team on Saturday.
Yeah.
So big week for the Bruins also if they want to get back in the thick of the conference race.
And Jack State, talking about them, like I know you talked, Ray Harper doing an amazing job. They kind of stumbled around out of conference a little bit, but really hitting their stride now. That one's going to be fun next week, Rocco. I hope you're able to make it down there.
Let's keep rolling into the Patriot League tonight. Patriot League now, where tonight Bucknell, who's in first place, survived against Loyola. They got a real tough battle from a not very good Loyola team, but they did win the game. They're now 6-1, Rocco. And is it them? Can Lehigh catch them? I think it's those two teams, though.
Yeah,
I think so too. I think Lehigh has shown, you know, throughout the year they're fairly consistent. 12-16, 5-2 in the league. They played Bucknell to the buzzer. I think Bucknell hit a shot with 1 second left. So Lehigh Bucknell, they already have a natural rivalry. I think we're going to see probably a round three for the conference title, unless there's, you know, a team like Colgate or Holy Cross or one of the military academies shaking things up. I almost call it a coin flip between Lehigh and Bucknell, just from what I've seen. Cause I don't think Bucknell is the type of team that they've had in the past when they had like Muscala and some of those other good teams in the last 5-10 years.
Yeah, we didn't expect much from Bucknell heading into the season. I thought Lehigh would be the team, but Bucknell has been impressive so far.
Real good.
Finding ways to win these conference games. This week they are at American and hosting Navy, while Lehigh is hosting BU. And I think that's it for Lehigh on that calendar there.
Yeah, just a Lehigh Boston.
I'm sorry. Next Wednesday is the big Lehigh Lafayette round two.
Huge rival. Oh yeah, that the first game was fun at open conference play. So
and it happened the first game when the students were on winter break, so it should be a lot more of a raucous atmosphere.
Right. Time. Yeah, that one's a good one.
But David, let me move on for you to the SoCon, which is the one conference that we've been really talking about as a potential for multiple bids this year. Offered, Greensboro, Tennessee State, Furman. I mean, where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with Wofford, who I know that they didn't do anything to really land themselves on the national radar out of conference, but they're probably the best team in the league. If you pull them up here, their losses, they had North Carolina at home. Their other loss at Kansas is unbeaten at home. At Oklahoma, I think Oklahoma only has one loss, or maybe they're unbeaten at home. No, it's K-State beat them. And then Mississippi State with only one loss. So this was a really kind of a gauntlet run. And I know when you look at that Kansas score, Kansas blew that game open. But at the under eight timeout, it was 42-40 Wofford. So this is a team that maybe swung a little too high, because those really weren't – outside of Mississippi State, they needed games that were against good teams, but maybe slightly more winnable than that. But this is a fantastic team. The win at UNC Greensboro, I think that's Greensboro's only home loss. They had a nice win over Furman. Furman got a lot of accolades, got into the national rankings largely because of that win at Villanova. But Wofford, if you thought Furman was good, Wofford has beaten them and is now three games ahead of them in the conference standings. And I think if the committee's charged with this, and if the whole idea behind the NET was to help teams from under-the-radar conferences that are good jump out in the eyes of the committee, Look at Wofford's NET. It's in the top 30. They're a first-place team with a top 30 net. Why shouldn't the committee take them?
Yeah, I mean, they do have probably three more tough, really tough tests left at East Tennessee State February 7th, hosting Greensboro the 16th, at Furman the 23rd. Rocco, if they run through this with maybe only one more loss and then they slip up in the conference tournament, is this Wofford team in?
Depends who they lose to in both. Of course, right? So as of right now, I couldn't agree more with what David explained. I think Wofford's actually inside my bubble right now.
They're in mine. They're inside mine, yeah.
Yeah, if I looked at them as an at-large profile, I have them in the last four, just above Baylor being my last team. So Wofford is clearly putting together an amazing resume. The four losses, as you guys stated, were against teams that you should not be ashamed of losing to, especially since all four of them were, besides North Carolina, away from home. So the other three were away from home, and North Carolina, arguably a top two seed. And the other piece to that is the Greensboro win on the road and the South Carolina win on the road were by 20-plus.
Yeah.
So if the committee wants to start looking at margin of victory, which I actually have an argument against, but if they do want to do that, this only supports the Wofford argument. And I think this Wofford team is deserving to be in at this point in the season.
Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here in the Southern. There's always good games, it seems, with these four teams up there, and also Samford and Citadel both have a little bit of competitiveness this year. In terms of this week's game, I guess it's the Samford is at Wofford and at Furman. That it might be a little bit of a weaker week this week, isn't it?
Yeah, Samford, let's discuss them for just a minute. They were fantastic at a conference. We were actually really surprised
about number 306 strength of schedule. That's why they put together a good record, David.
But one of their losses, they took Belmont to overtime. They showed signs of life against some pretty good teams, and they had certainly – maybe not just the under-the-radar story of the year, maybe the basketball story of the year. Are you stepping to me right now?
Are you stepping to me right now?
Yeah. Are you a little God surprised?
What a coach.
Yeah. I'm shocked that they're just 2-5 in this league, because I really thought that they would not win it but do better than that.
Well, it's a tough league this year. That's the problem. I mean, look at the Citadel. We were talking about how good they were non-conference, only 1-6 when you get to league play now. Quick score update before we go on. We mentioned that Loyola Chicago earlier. By the way, it went final. They got doubled up by Missouri State tonight, 70-35. That's a final score. That's pathetic. But let's move over, David, to your favorite conference. You like to reference them all the time. So here it is. Here's the Southland.
Yeah, a good story. Abilene Christian did something tonight that was they were dominating Stephen F. Austin, the traditional alpha program in this league, running away with it. And then in the final minutes, I just quit watching because it was clear at that point that Abilene Christian was going to win. What happened, Jed?
They blew it. And Stephen F. Austin with a three with a couple of seconds left in the game.
I'm not lying. I missed it. I turned it off.
Yeah, Stephen F. Austin had a huge comeback late. Literally stole the game. Was at home, but they stole the game from Abilene Christian. With that, and after Sam Houston State picked up a win tonight at Northwestern State, now a two-game lead for the Bearcats, Rocco, in the conference.
The Bearcats, yes. And you spell it with a K, not a C. Yeah. Sam Houston's been playing well. I feel like getting better every week too, because I think once SFA, fell off the top of the food chain, Sam Houston State was one of the teams we threw up there as the team that could possibly do it, and they've ran with it, taken the baton and ran with it, and they're winning by double digits in most of these games. So Sam Houston State coach Jason Wooten, Hooten, is playing very well.
Yeah, Sam Houston this week will be hosting Lamar, and then they're at Southeastern Louisiana. So look at those games, Abilene Christian hosting Central Arkansas and Corpus Christi. But let's keep rolling here. Yeah. And Rocco, over in the Southwestern Athletic Conference, I know what Texas Southern did non-conference, but Prairie View is 5-0 and two games up on them in league play now.
Yeah, that was interesting because, I mean, just looking back, Texas Southern losing to them, first of all, on the road was one thing. But then letting Grambling come in and steal a game away from them on their home court was another thing. And then seeing Grambling then turn around and go to Prairie View and be down 48-19 at halftime. And then, of course, a little bit of a rally, but still losing by 17. This Prairie View A&M team, I mean, they're playing very good basketball. And they showed a little bit of life during the non-league as well, if I remember correctly.
They won one game. But
they went 11. That was, one that, of them
was, but I'll pull the profile here so I can remember who it is. They picked up a huge non-conference. Actually, they won at Santa Clara. That was the game where they showed life. They won it big.
I feel like, okay, maybe I'm just a little bit off, but I felt like they were competitive in a few of these games.
By 11 at Baylor, they by 8 at Greensboro. So there were a few of those games that were close, by 8 at East Carolina.
Okay, forget it. But they're playing well now, and that's what matters.
It's this team is heading to Dayton, and honestly, with these losses in conference, David, I think whoever wins this conference at this point might be heading to Dayton, despite Texas Southern's wins over Oregon and Baylor.
Most likely. And last year we saw the MEAC SWAC matched up in the opening round. We might see that again this year. Is the 67-68 game?
Right.
In league, unless Texas Southern wins.
If Texas Southern can go undefeated the rest of the way here, they're at Pine Bluff and at Mississippi Valley. I do want to give a shout-out to both Southern and Alcorn State, who, heading into this week, were both winless in Division I play. They both picked up two wins this week to now move head and shoulders above a lot of other teams.
I got to say this for the SWAC. I think they're the 31st team or league this year instead of the 32nd. So
they might be. They might be. Who's behind them? The Metro Atlantic?
The MEAC, for sure. Oh, the MEAC is so bad.
The Summit League, where although they've been disappointing, Rocco, South Dakota State is in first place, or at least tied with Omaha for first place, but clearly the best team, just not the level of team that we thought they'd be heading into the season.
No, they haven't been. And, they're starting to show a little bit of glimpses, but they're playing teams like Denver and Oral Roberts in North Dakota, so we really can't tell.
Yeah, they're playing Summit League teams.
We like Fort Wayne for a couple of days. They fall apart. We like Oral Roberts for a few days. They get blown out by Denver. I've given up on liking anybody else. This week we like Omaha, which means they'll probably get blown out this weekend as well. David, the upcoming schedule, in fact, that Omaha team I just mentioned is at Fort Wayne and at South Dakota State. So maybe you circle that game Saturday, Omaha.
Yeah. South Dakota State has been disappointing, but that doesn't mean that their ceiling is any lower than what it was. If they continue to blow through this league, and it looks like that they will, and they enter that NCAA tournament, 25-6, 26-6, I wouldn't want to be playing them. Because while they've been disappointing, they're still capable of playing very, very well.
All right. Quickly over into the Summit League here, where Georgia State had been playing with fire and finally caught them, David, when they got Saturday, when they lost at Troy.
Yeah, and Rocco pointed this out last week. I tried to come off as sounding like the smart one, but Georgia State, prior to that, had been winning a lot of close games against teams that they really should have been burying, in my opinion. But, getting caught out there. And then Texas State on a roll this week. And I think the two play this week, don't they?
Yeah, Texas State off of that 3-21 strength, 9-6 this Saturday. We didn't think much of them. But
right.
Rocco, they did pick up two wins this week, and they've got a huge game coming up tomorrow, correct?
Big game coming up tomorrow in Atlanta at GSU, yes. Texas State's played very well at home despite losing to Georgia State, their only home loss by 4. So here we are still in January, and this will be the second matchup between the two. And, of course, what that means for the Bobcats is they can't just focus on Georgia State. They got to turn around and play another really tough road game at Georgia Southern Saturday. That's, at this point in time, the toughest road swing in the league, and we'll see what Danny Casper's boys are made of this weekend.
One of the game I'm going to keep an eye on tomorrow night, though, is this Troy at Louisiana Monroe game. Louisiana Monroe has been sniping a couple times. Troy, off of that Georgia State win, has a 10-8 overall. That they have a chance to make a little bit of noise here, perhaps as well. So that could be an interesting one.
I like this Warhawk team. I think they're dangerous. If you look at their if you look at the Monroe resume, they lost on two buzzer beaters in the league, but only two league losses. They had a weird stubbing of the toe at Tennessee Tech. But besides that, their only other losses are Texas, Michigan State, Ole Miss, and LSU. So this Warhawk team could be pretty dangerous, and we're still learning more and more every time they step on the court.
Last but not least, the Western Athletic Conference, where we saw last Thursday the big battle for first place between Bakersfield and UMKC. yeah. Bakersfield's still tied for first place. UMKC has fallen apart, though.
But yeah, trying to win the league before they leave the league. I still like New Mexico State. I they haven't looked the part at all in conference play. They had the win over Grand Canyon at home. It was a last-second shot. They got things off starting with a loss to a transitional Cal Baptist team, and they've had to sweat out their other two wins. But I still can't get past how high I think their ceiling is compared to everyone else. The Lopes, though, after losing a lot of close out-of-conference games, teams like Seton Hall, they played South Dakota State really tough, although that's turned out to be – and I think they had one or two more that were of close losses to high-caliber competition. 5-1, the only loss on a three-quarter shot at the buzzer at New Mexico State. So should we be looking at the Lopes? I know you picked them to win the league, Jed.
I did. I still like them, and I still – I think it's clearly going to be true that New Mexico State Bakersfield is going to fall apart here. Seattle, who I liked in non-conference, has been atrocious.
Oh, they've been atrocious.
So
they may be battling with Chicago State for the eighth seed, which is pathetic.
Yeah. But. So what's at stake here? The first place team gets a postseason tournament. They're not going to be inside the bubble, either one of them, New Mexico State or Grand Canyon. But I do think that both of those teams, whoever does finish first, would be capable of making a little bit of noise in the NIT or in some other postseason tournament, the NIT being the most exclusive. So something at stake there. And, God, it's been great theater, the New Mexico State Grand Canyon games. You just need to watch them. If you're not aware of that budding rivalry, which isn't really budding anymore, they hate each other. I'm already looking forward for when they play again.
Right, and the key games, this actually is interestingly for Cal Baptist, despite being ineligible, they're hosting Bakersfield and hosting Grand Canyon, the two first-place teams, and that could be a tough game for both teams there, Rocco.
Right.
Yeah, Cal Baptist has a great track record playing the top teams in the WAC at home. Just ask New Mexico State if you don't believe me.
And New Mexico State's at Rio Grande Valley, their game this week. But
yeah, and the CIT, is the door is open for Cal Baptist to be in that tournament if they're 500. Is that
correct? Yep. And 500 overall, so the non-D1 wins will count. So they're 10-7 right now. So. But let's move to our under the radar top 10 list, and then we'll finish things up. But for January 23rd, here it is. We've got six honorable mentions, teams that received votes but did not make it into our top 10. And they begin with Furman, who we mentioned, Radford, North Texas, Marshall, Belmont, East Tennessee State.
I'm surprised Furman's not in there. I did not vote for them, but I figured you all loved them.
Furman just missed the top 10. Coming in at number 10 was Greensboro, the other team out of the SoCon there.
Yeah.
So there's four SoCon teams in this. Well, I just gave away another team coming up later, but there's
– ooh, Vermont. Wow, okay.
Vermont coming in at 9. Rocco, I think you may have had them up there. I like them, especially coming into today, and I can't hit them too much because they were without their best player tonight in that loss. At number 8 was New Mexico State, who we just mentioned. At number 7, David Stony Brook.
Not playing like
struggling, but getting the win, so they stay in the top 10.
Yeah.
Number 6 in our top 10 list is Yale, a team that I am very high on. I think could keep moving up this list as long as they keep winning these games. And at number 5, we have Georgia State. Despite the loss, still hanging in there in the top 10.
Yeah.
Number 4, Hofstra.
Yeah, Hofstra. They're just on a roll right now.
Okay.
I think we all know.
Number 3, Wofford, who we just mentioned. That one can be number 3.
I can't understand how they're not number 1.
Apparently not number 1. Is there a mistake in our ratings here? Let's see here. Number 2, Lipscomb. And at number 1, Murray State. Murray State. Number 1. Yeah. I think I voted Wofford number 1. So
did I.
I meant to, if I didn't.
Oh, Well, maybe I ended up the numbers. Who knows? But those are your top three teams, whatever order. We don't know how to do things right here.
We really don't. You should watch another show.
You really should. I don't know why you bothered watching.
I don't know why anybody.
Waste an hour of your life. But yeah. Let's go to any other final thoughts for the evening. And Rocco, let me start with you.
Yeah, a special shout out to a player that I'm assuming most of our viewers have never heard of. His name is Andrew Kosteka. He plays for the Loyola Greyhounds in the Patriot League. He's been playing his butt off throughout his career. Here he is as a senior. And last week, he went for 28 points in an overtime win over Boston U, added another 26 points, plus the game-winning jumper to beat Holy Cross in overtime. Ended up winning the Patriot League Player of the Week honors. And then as we've been broadcasting this, I've looked up his statistics tonight in a very tough losing effort against Bucknell, and he had another 26 points and 7 assists. So especially
he's just showing off, in other words.
He's just going off, and I hope he ends up playing in one of our favorite new traditions, which would be the 3-on-3 tournament at the end of the year in the Final Four. Look out for Andrew Kosteka.
I thought you were going to say you were hoping he plays in the AC8 tournament, David.
Yeah.
David, let me let you finish off the show.
Okay, like I'm going to throw some spears at some of the non-under-the-radar leagues and say that, especially after what happened tonight, I am convinced that there isn't a single team in the A-10 that would finish in the top three of the SoCon. I'm not even kidding. They wouldn't. That's my final thought.
Well, I guess on that note, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of Rocco Miller, you can check him out at bracketeer.org. David Griggs, you can unfollow him at Twitter like I'm trying to do. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining
unfollowing me at Twitter is becoming a pastime.
I want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back again, I think, tomorrow night. We're going to do a bracket rundown show with lots of other content on the website. So, and we'll talk to you again real soon.